People are way overreacting to Joe Mazzulla. I mean, way over the top. I'll talk about that. Plus, Marcus Smart, the hustler. Should Embiid play? We'll talk about the Celtics defense here from Philadelphia. All right now on the Locked On Celtics podcast.
Be ever ready. Recognize the city of champs. Boston, baby, we do what you can't. Locked on number 18, Tatum and Brown, J-team, step back. We gon' wet that and slay teams. Of course, the Celtics, who else could it be? Screaming like KG with the Larry O.B. Corrales above average, assessing the team status. Best daily pod, no cap, salary matching. Clutch like Bird to DJ, keep John on replay. Prime time, dapping up the truth on the sideline. Rain and J's how it started, raising banners, how we finished. Locked on Celtics, pod, home of the winners. B.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast right here on the Locked On Podcast Network, where it's your team every day. And I've got a free, fresh podcast for you every day. All you got to do to get it is open up your favorite podcasting app, subscribe, boom, straight to your device. You can also watch the show on YouTube, ring the bell, hop in there, get into the comments section, join the conversation, start the conversation, fight with Philly 76ers fans. But very absent over the last day or so. A little weird. I'm John Corrales. I used to play. Now I cover the Celtics for Boston Sports Journal. I am here in a hotel room in Philadelphia, PA, getting ready for the Celtics game 3 against the Sixers. Later on, talk about the defense a little bit more. We'll talk about Joel Embiid and whether it's better if he just sits. We'll get into Marcus Smart, who won the Hustle Award. But let's bring in our good friend, Tom underscore NBA. What's up, Tom?
What is going on?
You know, a little thing called basketball, NBA playoffs. True. You might have heard of it.
Vaguely, and I'm ready to talk about it, even though I'm only vaguely heard of it. Let's get it.
All right, so basketball is a sport with a round ball, leather. Joe Mazzulla is taking, man, heat all over the place. Celtics win, he takes heat. Celtics lose, oh my God, the heat. It's becoming, I think, and I don't want to alienate a lot of listeners and or viewers because I think a lot of people feel the same way, but it's almost becoming a crutch at this point. If something goes wrong, blame Joe. You can yell about Joe and you're fine. Maybe you feel like there's a good chance you're going to be right. And Joe has not done everything right for sure, but people are complaining about how he ended his news conference after the game. He had a funny moment that people are having fun with after there was a Zoom from Philadelphia where he gets up and he's walking off, and I don't know why the context or anything like that, but he just walks off and says, "I am the worst coach ever." And you're like, "Oh, okay, that's an interesting thing to say," but I don't know, Tom. I feel like people are taking it like two steps too far. The guy had a 57-win team. You don't get that with an incompetent coach. They got through the first round in six games. It wasn't a sweep. It wasn't five games. And, okay, they dropped game one. They adjusted. They played game two really, really well. I don't know, man. I think there are some concerns, sure, but I think people are going way over the top with him.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a couple things going on. First of all, it's easier to blame the coach than it is to blame the stars, yeah. Right? Because if you start blaming the stars or if you start blaming somebody on the team, a lot of times what that's going to be taken as is like, you hate Tatum. Well, you know what? Now Tatum's going to leave. Yeah. So way to go. Now you guys are yelling Jason Tatum right out of town. Now you guys are yelling Jaylen Brown right out of town. Way to go, guys. And if you yell about the coach, then that's a little bit more just like, you know, coach isn't out on the floor, right? I mean, he's not playing.
And,
so.
And it's easy to agree about that as well. Like a lot of people are like, well, yeah, that's right. The coach.
Right, 100%. Because, you know, I think one of the things that happens is we don't actually see what the coach is telling the players to do, right? Like you can kind of disagree, agree, whatever. Like the players might be taking liberties, might not be taking liberties. I mean, Marcus Smart the other day just said that, you know, so much of the Celtics offense is random anyway. Like it's much easier to blame a coach because it's more kind of ambivalent what the coach is actually up to out there, what the coach is actually telling people to do. So I just think, like, when it comes to Mazzulla, you know, there's this sense, you know, I mean, obviously he was, you know, kind of like this with the coaching was such a surprise to him, right? Like being the head coach was a big surprise. I do think that people are going over the top. Like, if you really want to know what the Celtics organization thinks of Mazzulla, just kind of look at the way that, you know, that Brad Stevens has talked about him, that, you know, Danny Ainge has talked about him. Like, this guy was somebody that people had pegged for a while as a future head coach in the NBA. And like you said, like, I don't think he's been perfect either. But like, I think there's a lot of growth that's happening, like, in real time. And growth in real time requires stuff to go wrong, right? Like, you can't grow without kind of learning right. from mistakes. So,
right.
you know, the unfortunate thing for the Celtics is that, you know, this guy, you know, he has to learn on the fly. And that's, you know, due to circumstances that we've talked about 100,000 times already this season. But, you know, I think with Mazzulla, it's like we are seeing growth day to day, and that doesn't always look great. Doesn't always look bad, and sometimes, you know, he looks like a, you know, really good future NBA coach, and that just kind of comes with the territory of being 34 and thrust into this situation, I think.
Yeah, and I feel like I feel like people don't really understand an NBA coach's job. I think they see it as a job that the same as a college coach. His job is to motivate his players. Well, look, yes, but you don't give 82 motivational speeches. Right. You know, if you went to work every day and every day your boss gave gather around and gave a big motivational speech, the first one might be great, but then by the 10th one, you're like, is this going to happen every day? Like, is this just the thing? Can I come in late? Can I skip this part? Like,
right.
Can I put a time code like they do in our YouTube videos to get past all the chit chat and say, oh, show starts at 4 something? Like, you can't. So the coach, his job isn't necessarily to motivate these guys all the time. Players are supposed to motivate themselves. They're paid a lot of money. I you know. And I push back on when people say they get paid a lot of money, so they need to play 82 games and 40 minutes a game. No, they're not robots, but they're paid a lot of – your check is your motivation.
Yeah.
When you come in for game one of the conference semifinals, that's your motivation. You don't need me. If you need me, the head coach, to motivate you for game one of a playoff series, then I can't swear on this podcast, but – redacted you is what I'd say. You know, like, motivate your damn self. No one needed to motivate Kevin Garnett. No right. one needs to motivate those types of guys. No one needs to motivate Jimmy Butler. Go out mm-hmm. there and play. Get out there and play. The randomness comment, I think people take that way too seriously. You know what that's called, Tom? Read and react offense.
That's what it is. Yep. Yep.
When I say read and react, that's random.
Yeah.
You do something, you set a screen, you have everybody set, and you have a play designed to, well, you're going to set a screen here. If they go over, you do this. If they go under, they do this. If they go over and he hedges, you do this. If you go over and he drops, you do this. You know, you go all the permutations, that's randomness. That's read and react. So people, Tom, I just feel like people are like on the edge of their seat waiting for somebody to say, like, oh, he said random. Gotcha, Joe. Now you're it. Now that's it. Like, come on. Like, chill out.
I also think people don't understand, like, the depth that these guys go in on basketball, right? Like, and that kind of goes back to your thing about motivational speeches. Like, because the job of the coach, especially in the NBA, is not mostly motivational speeches. Like, the level of detail that all of these guys have in their heads at all times is ridiculous. Like, there's a reason that, like, you know, Derek White comes in midway through the season last year and has a hard time adjusting right away. There's so much going on. There's so much that goes into it. So, you know, with a read and react system, it's like, you know, there's all these little things that you're supposed to do, all these little things that you're supposed to keep track of. And like kind of designing all of that and putting all that together, that feels to me much more like the job of an NBA head coach than to like tell a bunch of grown men how they're supposed to act. Like, you know, like there's a little bit of that. And if you're a coach who can do that, great. But like, you know, I think there's a lot of coaches like, I don't know. I think you can be a really good coach and focus a lot more on the little detail things and the little things that everybody, you know, needs to be doing and that you need to be doing. Like that kind of stuff is kind of really, I think, the bread and butter of being an NBA coach.
Really good coaches get fired, like Mike Budenholzer.
Right.
Made some mistakes in that series, but his brother was also killed in a car crash in the middle of it. And, you know, hey, sometimes good coaches don't last long. And what makes a good coach? I don't know if anybody really truly knows, other than I think really, can he connect to his players? Does he have the respect of his players? Like, are the players going to go out there and actually do the thing that they're tasked to do? And the Celtics generally have, and maybe they don't do it forcefully as they should, but that's on them. I'll continue this conversation because I've had between this and my mailbag and my Boston Sports Journal Q&As, people are like, if he fails, you got to fire him. And that's absolutely the worst idea ever. I'll talk about that next. First, let's talk about eBay Motors. Because for a championship team, it's all about making sure every player is a perfect fit. It's the same when it comes to your vehicle. Every part needs to fit just right. So the next time you need parts or accessories, head on over to eBay Motors. With eBay Guaranteed Fit, you can be sure every part you need fits just right the first time around. Just add your ride to My Garage and look for the green check to know the part will fit or your money back. Because just like sports, confidence is the name of the game when you shop on eBay Motors. And with over 122 million parts to choose from, you'll be back in the game in no time. After all, it's easy to bring home a win when the right parts are guaranteed. Get the right parts, the right fit, and the right prices on ebaymotors.com. Let's ride. eBay Guaranteed Fit is only available to U.S. customers. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. I want to thank everybody for making Locked On Celtics your first listen every day. Head on over to the Locked On NBA feed. Make Locked On NBA your second listen. They got the whole league covered. It's a wild playoffs, and there's just a lot of fun conversation going on over there. Let's bring Tom Westerholm back into this. People are suggesting. I don't care that Joe just got a contract. Fire him. Pay the whatever buyout. And bring in a new coach. Worst idea ever. Because they will now, if they do that, you really want the fourth coach in 4 years on this team? Brad, Ime, Missoula, Coach X. Like, you cannot force these guys to forget another system, to learn another new system. Because even though there are similarities, it's different under Joe Mazzulla. It's different. They're more offense-focused than they were under Ime. There's different personalities that you have to get used to. I just don't think, like, let's just say it's Budenholzer that comes in. Hey, Budenholzer's available. Let's get rid of Joe. Let's bring Budenholzer in. He's won a championship. He gets it. And he's a really good coach. I'm sure the Celtics can figure it out, but it's another learning curve. It gets exhausting. It's exhausting to do this. So I just think that's a horrible, horrible idea. I think Joe Mazzulla is good enough to win a championship. I don't think he's so bad as a coach that he's going to cost the Celtics a championship. He's made adjustments. He has, you know, let's put Jaylen Brown on James Harden. Let's leave PJ Tucker. Let's, you know, do certain things. Let's focus on certain things here. And I think they were effective. I don't know, Tom. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, no, he's made adjustments and nobody wants to ask him about them. What's going on, guys? No, I mean, like, and when you look at, I mean, there's some of those adjustments took guts, right? Like, honestly, game one, I was watching Harden and just thinking to myself, like, wow, he is cooking Jaylen Brown. Like, just, you know, like, doing whatever he wanted against, you know, Missoula in game two, you know, was just, yeah, like, Jaylen, go guard him. And that, and, you know, that worked pretty well. There was a lot of good stuff there. Like, there's, you know, he does make adjustments, and not for nothing. Like, Celtics had the best net rating in the NBA all year. And I know they have good players. I know they have, like, a good, like, but that also requires, like, a system that utilizes all those players. And I think, you know, throughout the year, we saw Missoula, you know, make adjustments, make, you know, find better ways to utilize those guys. And, you know, especially, you know, we saw the players come out just blazing hot from three. We saw teams kind of get used to the Celtics. We saw that those numbers fall off. Then we saw them rise back up again. Like, we've seen, you know, progress. And that's, like, this season, like, throughout the regular season, that's all you could kind of ask for was progress. Now I think it's important that we see that in the playoffs again, right? Because, like, that first series, yeah, there were, you know, some stumbles, but, like, the playoffs are going to be a learning curve for Missoula as well, right? The Sixers are a tougher team than the Hawks. Okay, now it's 1-1. Let's see, like, what they do. But I overall do agree with you. Like, you'd really don't, if you want this team to stay happy, if you want this team to stay together, if you want this whole thing to work, you need consistency. You need, you know, just a, like, you need continuity that they just have not had in their coaching for several years now. And I mean, there's been a lot of chaos around this team. Like, I know, like, the core has been together for a long time, but when you go back through, like, the chaos that's been, like, Jason Tatum's entire career, Jaylen Brown's entire career, it has been a lot. So, like, now they're in the middle of their career. They probably would like to see something that they can kind of build with if they're going to stay in Boston. And yeah, I mean, the head coach is a huge part of that. I agree. I think if you think that Joe Mazzulla has a lot of potential, and it's clear the Celtics do, then you got to kind of see where that potential leads. You got to ride it out.
And like, when I say ride it out, it's the mistakes that he's making are, like, correctable, and he's correcting them. Yeah. Now, is he correcting them fast enough? That's one of the arguments. But one of the signature defensive plays that I've highlighted from game two is a double team of Harden and a kick to Niang at the free throw line. And look, everybody's seen that play. It's been highlighted by a million people because it's an awesome defensive play. And it ended up leading to a Derek White three, I think. Mm-hmm. What was the difference between that play and doubling Harden in game one? Doubling Harden in game one, they were half-assing it. It wasn't that the coach did something wrong with Harden. They did the same exact thing. When I did my adjustments the Celtics could make, the first thing I said is, just do the same thing, but better. Start with that. Start with, let's execute the game plan. Just let's actually play good basketball. And that's kind of what they did in large part. That double team was strong. It was Horford and Grant Williams. It was purposeful. When Smart picked up Niang across the middle, the help behind him was good. Grant Williams turned, recognized the play, recognized someone on the opposite corner. He went from the right wing to the left corner to pick somebody up and take away a passing option where Niang was then forced to try to force a shot up against Smart, which was blocked. That recognition alone from Grant Williams to go from right wing to left corner made that play and allowed Marcus Smart to block that shot. That play was not being made in game one. And that's not coaching. That's effort. That's guys on the floor deciding, like, okay, I'm actually going to play hard. That's the most infuriating part. And that happened under Brad. That happened under Ime. Like, people, I'm all over the place because I'm fired up. People will say, oh, God, you got to get Ime back here. Like, the Celtics didn't punt a game against Milwaukee in the playoffs last year and punt a game against Miami and completely melt down in the final 6 minutes and were a missed Jimmy Butler three-pointer away from losing that series with that meltdown, that late meltdown. Who was on the sideline for that? Ime. This is a player right. thing. This is the players. They are the ones who have to put that effort. You know, if they play that way with that effort, then Joe Mazzulla suddenly looks like a great coach right. because these guys are actually executing and they're so good they can actually execute the plan.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's honestly like I said it jokingly before, but it's like nobody wanted to ask him about the offensive, about the adjustments in game two. Like they won right. game two. So he looks great. Right. Like it's like you can't give the players credit for wins. And then, you know, blame the coach for the loss. Like that's just not, this is all part and parcel. You know, it all comes together. It's systemic, right? Like it's a symbiotic relationship. So, yeah, I mean, I think, look, like, and the other thing I would say too is that it is like game two of the second round. The Celtics have lost one game so far against the Sixers. And yeah, I also think they should have probably won that, you know, yes. game one, like yes. 100%. And, you know, whoever that indictment is on, it's on, you know, like it's on them.
Strongly. Everybody.
It's on everybody. They should have won game one. Then they did what they had to do and they came out and won game two. If they win games three and four in Philly, and that's not out of the question because we know they can win in Philly and they look, you know, they looked great yesterday. Like if they win those next two games, this is all, like all this freak out is literally for nothing because then they'll be up 3-1 going back home. And it's like, and then all of a sudden they look like a championship team again. And it's back to like the, you know, the path to the finals. That's super friendly. Like, I don't know, man. It's all like, I think this is where it comes back to where you started, right? This is all a big overreaction. Like, let's yeah. see where this goes, guys, before we start freaking out.
I just want people to just enjoy the game. Like, stop.
Right.
Like, right. Enjoy these games. Enjoy Marcus Smart, Hustle Award winner for the second year in a row, three times out of 5 years. Marcus Smart, noted hustler, noted serial eater. Amazing that he hustles as much as he does when he allegedly doesn't eat before games.
Do you buy that?
I question that.
I don't buy that one bit.
I question that. Come on. You got to eat before games. Everybody eats before games. Maybe you don't eat. And you know, when he says I don't eat like all day, come on. You eat. It's just you don't eat 4 hours before or 3 hours before the game, but you come on. He just wanted to sell his cereal.
That's what I think.
It looked good. There's a picture of me floating around where Smart's got his hand in the cereal box and I'm kind of like looking. It makes it look like I'm like starving and hungry. Like, oh, please, sir, can I have some of your cereal, sir? I'm so hungry. Although you can tell by the picture that I have not missed a meal in quite a long time. So I'm not really that peasantly. But I was trying to see, like, what is that?
I'm not
is
that, that like a... peasantly. I like the word peasantly.
Yeah. Pretty cool of Smart for Smart to win that award. And look,
cool of him. Real quick, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, cool of him to win it in a year when you know he didn't get honored defensively. Like he is. This was not his best defensive year, but the man is still going. You know, the man is still out there diving for everything. Yeah. You know, going for everything.
He's a lunatic.
He's a lunatic, and like, yeah. You know what? He should win that. He should win an award like that, even in a year when he isn't the best defender in the league. Not even probably the best defender on his team. He's still a crazy person. So
he is a very crazy person. He just at some point it's going to be like a zombie. Like he's just going to have his arm fall off, and they're going to have to stitch it back on, and all of that stuff.
I mean, when Embiid landed on him yesterday, it was like, like you knew he was coming back out, but it was like, ow,
yeah. And people like will understand the difference. It's like when somebody dives, like two people dive and one lands on each other. Okay, that sucks. But Embiid looked like it was dead weight, which just feels heavier. Like it was just like a big tree falling, like timber, boom, right on top of Smart. Like he was falling a lot. I guess I was joking around about it because he took that one little bump from Grant Williams and just crumpled. And I was like, come on. But I don't know. Maybe that right knee is just completely unstable. And they're like, hey, don't try to hold yourself up. Just fall.
Yeah.
And he just kept falling, which is, I think, a legitimate thing. Like,
yeah,
don't try to catch yourself. You'll snap the tendon. So just if you're on that side, just go to the ground. And Embiid's like, oh yeah, I do that anyway. So
like, oh, this comes naturally.
That's not a problem for me. I fall easily all the time.
Say no more.
Which adds to the question of like, are we at a point for Philly where Embiid is not playable for them? Because there's two theories here. Either he's unplayable because he's nowhere near 100%, and he seemed to admit as much, or he's closer to the 100% than anybody was letting on, and he's just milking it, and they needed to play him in this game, understanding that the cardio is more beneficial than the extra 2 days of rest. It's one of those two things. Either they're screwing up, and considering the Philly medical staff's history, I'm leaning towards they're really screwing up. But it's possible that this is gamesmanship, and they're just trying to get some legs under Embiid so he can be, you know, ready to go at home and try to finish the Celtics off just by holding home court.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know without obviously seeing records and stuff like that. But I mean, I didn't think he looked healthy yesterday. It was weird. I felt like people were kind of split on like, okay, did Embiid look healthy? Like I saw a lot of people saying, like, this guy looks, you know, kind of like what, you know, kind of what you're saying, where it's like, wow, like I don't know if he should be out there, or if, you know, I saw other people being like, yeah, he looked fine. And I certainly fell into the camp of like, I didn't think he looked fine. I mean, you know, he came up hobbled on that one play. I thought, you know, there was that one play where he scored. It was like a layup in the first half, and he kind of scored it and landed funny under the basket, yeah, like with two like really straight legs. And then, I mean, he didn't look super comfortable running back up the floor after that one. Like, I don't know, man. I think that Philly does need him out there because, like, you know, you put him on the bench. I know Harden had a huge game in the first in game one, but like, do you think that Harden is like, you know, is that repeatable? Like, can you keep doing that over and over?
I don't think that Harden is repeatable.
Yeah.
But I think the D'Anthony Melton, Tobias Harris,
the spacing, you know,
effort, Paul Reed making an impact on the offensive boards, I think that's repeatable. I think the threat of Harden is repeatable. And I still think the Celtics should win.
Yeah.
And the Celtics had chances to win that game one. Like, everybody's so disappointed, we forget about the fact that the Celtics were still in it at the end. They had their opportunities, no matter what you say about how that game went. The last 2 minutes go differently. Things like if you execute that play and not have the 24-second violation / maxi dunk, like that could have changed the game entirely in Boston's favor. So
heck, if you want to get really rosy with it, if the refs call a foul that they said they should have called, that then turned into the maxi three pointer. Yeah, on the trip that Harden did. You know, you could make that case. You could make the case that it was a shot clock violation, which, as multiple people have said, if you're relying on a shot clock violation to save you, you probably didn't deserve to win anyway. But, you know, those were two big missed calls too. So it's like, I don't say that to say the Celtics got robbed. I say that to say that they were right in the game.
They were right
like,
there.
They were right there. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, I think after thinking about it, that the Harden spaced floor, everybody gets a chance offense might be more effective than what Embiid. Now, Embiid, this is why things are split. Embiid on the defensive end looked pretty good. Now, this is where you get down deeper and deeper and deeper into the, okay, on the surface level, wow, Embiid, five block shots? Wow. No block shots in the second half. Mm-hmm. Why? Because in the first half, the Celtics were testing him. The Celtics went at him and they said, okay, big boy, let's see what you got. Oh, well, okay, you got them blocked shots. All right, never mind. Sorry, sir. We'll just do something different. And like, that's how it should have gone. I'm a big believer in you do not fear the shot blocker. You go and you test him, but you got to go into his chest. You got to go in there and go play through him and force him to make a play. And hey, he made plays defensively. So good for him. He made some really spectacular ones defensively. So people who are saying like, no, Embiid actually looks pretty good. You can hang your hat on those block shots.
Absolutely.
And even turning the corner on Al Horford and getting that dunk, that looked like, whoa, that came out of nowhere. Like, okay. But then third quarter, he looked awful. Absolutely. Like when I sit there and say, look, as an objective observer, I'm looking at that and saying, okay, Boston's better with a limited Embiid on the floor. But I'm saying, like, purely from a Boston perspective, play Embiid. Yeah, absolutely. Keep him out there. From an objective perspective, I'm looking at it saying, like, look, Philly, you're the underdogs in this series for a reason. Don't make it worse. You saw a formula that works against the Celtics. It's actually kind of a similar formula to how the Hawks made the Celtics sweat a little bit more than a lot of people expected, myself included. Try that. Go to that.
I always have respect for the Hawks.
What's that?
I said I always had respect for the Hawks. I don't know.
100%. We never, no disrespect. Like, I can't imagine how anybody would take it any otherwise. But look, man, you go out there, you say, Embiid's too hurt. We got to go with this plan. You sit Embiid, and if you lose, then Doc and Daryl Morey can go to ownership and be like, we had them. We had them. If Embiid was healthy, we had them. Let us keep our jobs for another year. And we'll show you that we had them.
Give us a chance to show you. Yeah.
Of course, Harden's going to leave for Houston, and that's gonna fall apart. But let us keep our jobs one more year, and we'll prove it to you. So, I don't know. I personally feel like Joel Embiid, if he's limited like this, he's a liability. And that's a problem for them.
It is. I do kind of feel like the Celtics, I understand like the spacing and all of that stuff. The Celtics just have too much firepower for a Philly team without Embiid. I think like there's too much good stuff on the Celtics to make that a winning strategy. But I mean, you know, if it's a keep your job strategy, it's something for sure.
We got to do the keep your job strategy. You know who should lose their job? A person who thought about the drone on TNT. Fire that person. Actually, no, I do not want anybody.
Don't fire anybody. Nobody loses their job.
Don't actually fire anybody.
Fire the drone, though.
But fire the drone. The drone can lose its job.
Absolutely. Give it to,
you know, that person who came up with the idea, take the drone, give it to your kid. Let the kid go play, you know, with the drone outside. You know,
absolutely. Like, yeah, a little present for the company. Look, I like the idea, right? Like, I like it in theory. Like, give us a bunch of angles. Sure, why not?
Sure.
But also, we don't need those angles. There's a good angle for basketball. We watch it every game.
Yeah.
Every time. That back and forth, it's perfect. It's been around forever for a reason. It's chef's kiss. I can see the action. I can follow it nicely. No problems. If you really want to get crazy with it, switch it to the kind of the 2K, for a shot or two, right? Like you,
yeah.
Where you're kind of behind the
use the shot clock camera.
Sure, absolutely, yeah, sure. I don't need a drone. Like I never needed a drone. I appreciate the sentiment. I appreciate the hustle. Didn't need it. Didn't like it. Yeah. Didn't like feeling like there was a fly on my TV whenever it was going by.
That was brutal.
Like, just
they at least
not good.
Switched it to the other side.
Yes,
they switched it to the other side.
I assume because Twitter complained about it incessantly. Yeah.
But then it was near me, and I just kept like looking at it, and I'm like, do I still have a good arm?
Okay, right.
I'm like,
can I get a beer? I
got
to get a drone out of the sky.
Hey, everybody, heads up. I think everybody would have been happy about that. Just drone should go away. We're going to go away right now, too, because podcast is over. So, Tom, appreciate you as always, buddy.
Appreciate you, man.
And I appreciate all of you listening and watching on a daily basis. It's a Monday through Friday podcast. Shout out. This is so funny. I drove to Philadelphia because flights were outrageous. And so I stop on the New Jersey Turnpike to hit a rest area. and I'm walking through and somebody looks over, is like, are you John Corrales? And so you never know where a Celtics listener, a Lockdown Celtics listener, is going to be. Shout out to you. Shout out to anybody who's out there in Philly. If you're in Philly and you see me, say hi, please. I want to say hi. Let's show him. Let's show everybody the strength in numbers here on the Celtics side. So thanks for everybody for listening. Thanks for watching. And thank you for sharing the podcast and telling everybody they should be listening to and watching the Lockdown Celtics podcast right here on the Lockdown Podcast Network, your team every day.